pick this up.
We had a whole series in the 1960s, late 1960s, starting perhaps around 65 through, I would say estimate 69. We were approached by friends, acquaintances in the government mainly, to set up a bunch of clearinghouses. And while we had right proposals, they were only nominally competed. So we set up the clearinghouse on child abuse and neglect, mm-hmm. and smoking and health, and family planning, and a whole series of them. And we had to write complex proposals, but we really weren't competing. You know, there was a bias, but it was in our favor. We were pre-interviewed, as it were.
Oh, is that right? Huh.
They would spend about a day. Maybe they pre-interviewed other firms. They probably did. And then they would decide who they asked to write a proposal. And that's how we got these various things.
And this was all NIH work?
No. Let me see. What is it? The clearinghouse on child abuse and neglect was not NIH at all. It was in HHS. There was a unit that took care of social problems.
Mm-hmm. Within Health and Human Services, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That one. And the one on smoking and health was out of CDC.
Mm-hmm.
First it was a separate unit, then it went to CDC, then it came back separate. I think it's separate now.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's at CDC now.
Mm-hmm. Did you staff all of these places? So you had to get into hiring people?
Oh, yes.
Interviewing?
Oh, yes.
What kind of folks were you looking for?
People, well, one type was people who could handle telephone inquiries and interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And then specialists in various subjects, chemistry, biomedicine. We also hired biomedical indexers and abstractors,
mm-hmm.
people who could process information of various types. So we had subject specialists, and we had guys who could write representations of written materials. The whole gamut.
Were these more like information analysis centers than they were special libraries?
Oh, yes, there was. The closest thing would be information analysis centers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So not many librarians
you
were hiring?
No.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, now that I think about it, our experience was that librarians would not do the job.
Not really? Why is that?
I don't know. Personality?
What about lack of subject training? Was that a problem?
Well, no, we had other people who had no subject training who could do it. But that's a strange phenomenon. Matter of fact, I'm just experiencing, I have a librarian whom we appointed to head up this alternative medicine thing.
Mm-hmm.
And for personality reasons or other reasons, she failed miserably.
And you found this to be the case generally with librarians?
In
the scientific technical
world? Yeah, yeah. Huh.
Personality, you say, huh?
I think. Mm-hmm. Temperament.
Yeah.
They are seeking a certain structure that doesn't exist, perhaps.
Hmm. Not innovative enough? Not able to roll with the punches, so to speak?
That's right.
Why do you think this is the case?
I don't know. I still have a theory that if you got a terrific reference librarian, you would it would work. But, many librarians are introverted. They don't meet the public well.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go through regular training courses. We had interview protocols and all the things you say. And that worked very nicely, if they would follow that.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, the stuff you have to put in there, hello, how are you, and stuff, you don't just start with the question, but the whole script.
Huh.
And that worked. On the other hand, I can make calls to one of our clearinghouses right now, and I can get a whole spectrum of types of responses. I know one, and strange to say, it's not the, we have two of them going, Alzheimer's and alternative medicine. The alternative medicine staff is trained, and they're very nice, very smooth operation, Alzheimer's, it's a different crew and not as good.
You haven't figured out why?
Well, we have subcontractors working on the Alzheimer's, and we try to control their staff, but we can't as readily as with this alternative medicine. We're it. And we can run it a little better.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Hmm. Interesting.
So it's partially political, I don't know.
Yeah. Huh. Now, what struck me in looking at your projects were that they were an interesting combination of research and development work.
Yeah.
Is this deliberate, or is that what was available?
No, I guess that's why we got the projects.
Because
we were research-oriented.
Mm-hmm. And that's primarily because of your interest in user studies, would you say?
That's where it started.
Yeah. What areas have you seen over the years that needed research that wasn't being done in the field of documentation or information science?
I would have to put it under the rubric of motivational. What leads, working backwards from what they did, what caused them to do it? Was it their previous training? Or is it... Or is it their environment? No, it's like saying there. One question that arose is: do people respond first to their current environment, and then their past training and environment, or do they respond to primarily their past environment and training? And that's always intrigued me. And again, you can segment them in the highly applied fields. It's current. I think, environment. Mm-hmm. In the more basic sciences, it's their make a full use of their total training.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has to do with it.
Because they're theoretically oriented? Or,
yeah. The other thing is that they are more inclined to attend meetings, the basic scientists,
mm-hmm.
and interact continually. And they pick up a whole mix of methodologies
mm-hmm.
from their colleagues. So that they're swapping, whether they know it or not, methodologies and motivations, as well as specific techniques,
mm-hmm.
as well as specific pieces of information.
Mm-hmm.
But the greater the exposure, the greater the opportunity, the and then they're more likely to be using the literature of the field.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this ad, you get this mixture,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes a pretty dynamic thing for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can see things happening and churning, and they're getting ideas on how to get information, and they're getting ideas about their specific subjects. And so to come back to your earlier point where we talk about librarians and so forth, people who are active in the field, let's say you have a technical information specialist who's answering questions, some people pick up, use the questions themselves as fuel, because every question contains an answer.
Mm-hmm.
You may not even know that such information was required.
Yeah.
So that's a piece of information in itself. And some people absorb that and then assimilate it and add it to their fund of knowledge. And they become, in a sense, knowledge-based expert systems
mm-hmm.
themselves.
Whoever's doing the technical information work.
Yeah.
Huh? Interesting.
And, of course, one of the themes that I push is, and I guess a lot of other people do, is now if you could keep a record of all those experiences, you can really develop a realistic, effective, knowledge-based information system, expert system.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to get funding for any of these ideas to pursue them, or able to do them in your contracts?
Well, we did some of it in our contracts.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing them some of it in our contracts.
Are you? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this puts together both your interest in user studies as well as the other areas that you've been interested
yeah.
in.
Huh. Yeah. It doesn't happen in so many ways.
Yeah.
But you, I guess I instinctively, I'm always churning away, I'm always adding.
Uh-huh.
So it's like I'm making one gigantic, I'm hoping to make one gigantic in whatever field it is,
mm-hmm.
Knowledge-based expert system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you been able to computerize this in any way and get it into an operational system?
We have in, as a matter of fact, in all instances, we keep records of the experiences,
mm-hmm.
diaries. They got another thing going on now, which is interesting. They're trying to automate everything. So we are developing or purchasing or refining what they call fax-back systems,
mm-hmm.
where you get a request and it's on a form. You put it on a form so that you can quickly use the letter of request or the record of the request, send it back, and it says, you asked on such and such a date, you asked for such and such, and here's what we found.
And put that into the computer, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And fax it back to the person?
Yeah.
Hmm. How is that working out?
A little clumsy, but it's being refined. Mm-hmm. I think it'll work.
Now, your folks are doing this in the various contracts that you have.
Yeah.
Like the one on alternative medicine and such.
Right.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you about an automation project. In 1960, I saw you were working on something called the Herner & Company Special Computer. Tell me about that.
That was really a first of all, it was a statistical machine, and it was an analog computer. And so we were measuring we were able to handle this was worse than the anything I said about the rapid selector or the in that it could only count, and but it could do fairly complex correlations.
Uh-huh.
And we used to reduce data on surveys with it. It was a matter of voltages. Number one had so many volts. Code two had so many volts, so on and so forth. We could combine six subjects at a time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Were you trying to do information retrieval on it also, or just statistical
stuff?
We
tried to.
Uh-huh. Who built the basic thing for you?
A guy who worked for me, a guy by the name of Henry Heatwall.
Oh, well, I've seen his name.
Heatwalle.
Uh-huh.
Brilliant guy. He used to make his own printed circuits. He could do anything. In fact, I still have something, I guess, at home.
Oh, huh.
They're beautiful works of art.
Oh, yeah? How many of these did you produce? Two. Where did they go?
We gave them away to, was it the Smithsonian? We gave it to somebody, some institution.
Oh, did you? Huh. You used them strictly within your company?
Only within my company.
Yeah. Huh. Did you lose money on it?
A fortune.
Oh, really?
A lot of money, anyway.
Huh. Now, you were buying components from places like IBM and such, and
that's
putting this
right.
thing?
That's right.
How big was this thing?
About the size of this sofa.
So about 6 feet long, yeah.
And higher than that.
Uh-huh. And an analog machine, huh? Interesting. Now, this is right when the 1410, IBM 1410, came out.
Just at the wrong time. Right?
Uh-huh.
We used it mainly for publicity, tell the truth. We
didn't
do a hell of a lot with it.
But you did do some correlation work and that kind of thing.
Remember, we did a survey of the use of the stacks at the Library of Congress.
Yeah.
And we did that. We reduced all the data on that. And that was pretty good.
Hmm.
That was interesting. I used to get into experimental design. They wanted to know. I'm trying to remember why they wanted to know. They wanted to know how to allocate study spaces in the stacks, because there's a terrific traffic. So they wanted to know who is there for frivolous reasons and who is there for concrete reasons and who is there like this congressional staff as opposed to scholars, which is a loose concept.
Uh-huh.
And so what we decided to do, did a number of things for the Library of Congress. We assigned each section of the stacks a random number. from a table, a random number. And then we did a count, just a count, to see how many people on the average day were using a given section.
Mm-hmm.
And then we allocated X number of RAM. So now we have a total, what percent is using this section and what percent. And then we took a set of random numbers and we arranged them in random order. It sounds absurd when I say it, that we had interviewers going around in random order, randomized to time and day, date of week, and so forth,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
to find out what they're doing there and how they're making out and various other
mm-hmm,
things.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting study, as a matter of fact.
Well, that sounds like a nice methodological way to go about doing it.
Yeah.
Were you pleased with the results?
Yeah.
And the Library of Congress was pleased?
Yeah.
Huh.
I remember sitting, Henry DuBester, you know that name?
Yeah, uh-huh.
I was doing this for Henry. He was in charge of reference at the library at the
mm-hmm.
time. So he takes me to Quincy Mumford, to his office, and I'm going to explain what I'm doing. And I remember Mumford saying to me, "But it's all random." And I was telling him, "That's the beauty of it. It's absolutely objective and representative and so forth." And he kept saying, "I don't see how it can be representative if it's random."
He didn't understand
that was the end of my audience.
Oh, huh. Interesting. Talk about your problems and advantages in the information business compared with folks like Garfield and with Taub and with others in the competition. Now, we talked about who the competition was, but how would you compare what advantages you had and what disadvantages you had compared with them?
Well, they both thought on a bigger scale than I did. I always wanted to keep it small.
Mm-hmm. And that is DC focused?
More or less DC mm-hmm. focused. But small staff, small space, limited number of activities, and not don't stick your neck out in that. If you can afford it, do it. If you can't afford it, don't do it. If the competition is too tough, forget it.
Mm.
And they both Todd went one route. He was more or less bought out and so forth. And Garfield just started producing products.
Mm-hmm. Mostly became a publisher.
Yeah. And I didn't do that until late.
Mm-hmm.
I remember saying to somebody, if I want to be a publisher, I'd be a publisher if I want to be a... And then I got suckered into the publishing end, which I still regret.
Mm, do you?
Yeah.
This is when you started Information Resources Press?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It was not a good idea.
Huh. It's been a financial drain?
Terrific drain.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, various things happen. My first books we published were by Wolf Lancaster,
mm-hmm.
and they did pretty good. And then he decided if I can do it, he can do it. So he started publishing and he was plagiarizing books that I had published for him. And we started getting into disputes. We're still disputing, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really? Yeah, because you published the first edition of Vocabulary Control,
yes,
as I recall.
Yes, yes. And the first edition of Measurement and Evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what he's plagiarizing.
So this latest one that he's done on evaluation, he published himself? Is that what he did? I don't remember.
Two of them. We published one, and then he had another one, which was called So You Want to Evaluate Your
Right, uh-huh.
Well, that was a lot of that is from measurement and evaluation.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And we started going to attorneys and stuff, and the thing got so thick I decided I don't want to pursue it.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to Taub as advantages. Now, Taub went big into the contracting business. For example, he got the NASA contract.
Yeah.
Were you a bidder for that contract?
No. As a matter of fact, we weren't. The funny part of it is, about 10 years later, we got about half of that contract as a subcontractor to the Planning Research Corporation. So we got all the abstracting, indexing, and so forth.
Well, so you were producing STAR then? Uh-huh. Well, I did not really realize that you had that contract to produce STAR.
I had that for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Recon.
Right, uh-huh.
It works.
Oh, were you doing on the online? Doing the online on Project Recon?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
We had a hell of a lot of big contract.
What was it like working with Mel Day?
It was not bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if he told you this, but when we finished the whole thing, he retired from the government. And he came to work for me.
I know. He said he came to work for you and said he learned a lot about how to run a business from you.
Yeah.
And,
he's a funny guy.
Yeah. As I said, a good storyteller. Well, how would you describe the nature of the changes from 55 to now? In the information business, as you saw it?
Well, now, as a matter of fact, it intrigues me, because, let's say, 10 years ago, nobody ever heard of the internet. Just as recent as 10 years ago. And now, everything plays into the internet, is part of the internet,
mm-hmm.
or related to the internet. So what I saw happening, I was writing a guide for one of my contracts, and I remember we had all these sources of information laid out, and they were vaguely related to one another. But you could categorize them, and I was trying very hard to follow the pattern of this brief guide that I did in 1970, published in 1970, and I found it harder and harder, the different kinds of information, and I was basing in the original brief guide, it was information about ongoing research, where to go when you don't know where to get information,
mm-hmm.
and second, ongoing information,